Hello?
Na 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 na. Hello?
Not bad.
Not bad.
Not well. It is. It kind of is bad.
Yeah.
I think I remembered which buttons to push here. I think I pushed all the correct buttons.
Yeah, just say pewter.
Although,
and tell it to do the live stream.
Hang on, my QuickTime is not quick timing. Cannot record. Try again. Okay, cool. Luckily, audio hijack's not terrible. But I'm just gonna do this live
from New York.
I have not known what day of the week it is all week this week. So that's. I think it's Wednesday. It's Wednesday. Is that right?
It is Wednesday. So you should have a calendar app and reminders and notifications and perhaps a fancy wrist computer that reminds you of the things that are in your calendar and your app and your schedule.
Yeah, I do. I have that. It reminds me of the things. It doesn't really yell at me and say it is Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Just says, hey, there's a thing. Go do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Usually lots of things.
Mm-hmm. Too many things. Speaking
too
of things.
Many secrets. Speaking of things.
Yeah.
That's a good transition.
Yeah. Well, you mean, there was some debate about what to do for a movie and, you know, where to go in terms of tone and setting and place and stuff after we did our recent spate of crap.
Suicide Squad.
Yeah. Just all those. Really great ones. I think that this is a good palate cleanser and sort of pivot from that. We have not done the Lego movie on this podcast, but you know, it's great. Go watch it, I guess. But this is not really like directly, is not a continuation of events from that. This really does stand by itself, other than containing some whimsical aspects and, the character casting of some of the roles, but that it's not really essential for anyone to know that ahead of time.
Yeah. It has more references to the actual other Batman movies than the Lego movie.
Yes. And not just the Batman movies, but the comic books and cartoon and also the 1960s TV show. Of it in there.
The shark repellent.
Mm-hmm. The shark repellent, a big joke, and also was it Eggman? He's not like a real villain or real quote unquote. He's not a villain from the comics or movies or anything. He's from the 1960s TV show, and it was I think Vincent Price who played the character. But you know, this has a lot of other references too, because I don't know, in the post. Ready Player One society, we need to just be ready for intellectual property attacks at any moment.
Are you saying Ready Player One is this generation's 9/11?
No. I'm
Would
not
you
saying
like to
that
go
at
on
all.
Record saying that,
no. Hard pass. That's not saying that. But
Polka Dot Man was in there in one of the bad guys, which we would not have known about until we saw the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, and Calendar Man, who has a brief appearance in Suicide Squad.
I bet Calendar Man knows what day of week it is.
Yeah, wouldn't that be funny if he didn't? but yes, Calendar Man. His attacks are based on the calendar or something. Like he leaves, like it's not like the Riddler where he leaves clues, but it was just like some sort of calendar based stuff. Anyway, it's not exciting.
Nothing strikes fear into the heart of people quite like calendar-based crime.
Well, the only thing that's worse than calendar-based crime is condiment-based crime, which is why you have the Condiment King, who they highlight a couple times in here, which is...
I couldn't tell if that was a joke or not, because it was always like the end punchline, but I don't think there's a DC bad guy that shoots ketchup and mustard out of his hands.
You're wrong.
Is there one?
Yeah, it's Condiment King, but the... Zach Galifianakis's Joker even says it at the end when he's introducing all the ridiculous names of these villains, and he says they're real, you know, Google them or whatever. And
It's, might be worth a Google.
Yeah, it might be worth a Google. Because it's pretty, you know, outlandish to get this specific assortment of things. I feel like it's an interesting collection, despite all these disparate components, because it's so ridiculous that no one's really sitting there going, you know, what are the physics of this world and like the Phantom Zone or whatever. At a certain point, you're just like, yeah, I just want the jokes. Like, I just want the, you know, silly, goofy stuff. Make the silly, goofy stuff happen. So
it combines, you know, the extended DC universe probably better than most of the other DC movies.
Yeah. I have on more than one occasion, mostly seriously suggested that this is my favorite of the Batman movies.
It's very silly, though. I don't know that it really fits in as a Batman movie.
But that's, I think, okay, this is why I made this choice, and I will defend it, because Batman is pretty silly. And a lot of times people forget that Batman is silly, and they think that he is dark and gritty and brooding and all of that. And they want to just sort of downplay all the goofy aspects. Especially, you know, like the Christopher Nolan movies, where it's very serious. But it's not you know, really embracing the fact that this is a guy who dresses like a bat, who fights crime because his parents were killed, and he doesn't want that to happen to other people. And he has a sidekick who is a little gymnast orphan, and he has a butler. He's British, and he's got this other ridiculous cast of characters around him. Like, it is an absurd thing. And so, you know, one direction you can always go is to try to take it as seriously as possible and strip out anything funny, like Nolan did, and like, you know, Snyder did slightly differently, grimmer and darker tones. And another direction you can go is to be pretty broad and slapstick with it, because you're sort of embracing the comedy of it. You're giving it a big old hug and saying like, I love you, even though you're absurd. And I do tend to favor that approach over the we need to turn something silly into something serious approach, because then I get caught up in how silly it is that you've turned something silly into something serious. You know, where you've tried to I don't know, it's like, if this was something you might say sanitized, but it's not sanitization. It's like you're trying to like just scrub out all the fun, and to make it seem like it's this perfectly logical thing that there's this guy who's rich who dresses up like a bat and fights crime.
Well, he's a superhero, and you know, superhero movies tend to be action based, but you know, they did it for Iron Man, so it seems that they should be able to do some of that for the Batsman. But
Password Iron Man sucks. But
Iron Man does not suck, but that is a joke from this movie.
Yeah.
I get your point. It's just that this feels way more like the Lego movie than it feels like anything else, obviously, because it is Lego based, but just in terms of, you know, content, story, characters, all that stuff. It's a Lego movie.
Yeah. Well, and, I agree with you there. It is definitely not a completely standalone concept of embracing just Batman, because like you said, it is a Lego movie. There's Lego stuff. There's a lot of stuff about building things, that comes up several points.
You get your Master Builder references in here.
Yeah. Although this is careful not to show a world that is real, I guess, outside of it. Unlike the Lego movie, series having, you know, the family, the real family.
They do hint at it, though, when they describe that the world is built on top of like two posts with nothing in the middle. That it's just kind of a table.
Yeah. And that it just smells like dirty underwear down there. So that's, you know, a thing. But this movie says there is an internal physics and stuff to it that doesn't map to reality, basically. So you can kind of be more free to do stuff. I think if this had just been a straight up animated movie that had nothing to do with Lego, but was still Batman in this manner, it may be more difficult to accept some of the ridiculousness of it, because it does have that element of play of, you know, childhood imagination that Lego brings, as opposed to something that is more concrete. Like, nothing here feels real. Like, the water is little fluctuating Lego bricks in some scenes, and other scenes it's a liquid substance. And you know, with the whole fluid simulation and everything. So it is...
I must run out of money.
It is whatever it needs to be to make sense for the comedy parts of it. But it is not... is not just comedy. It has a decent amount of heart, which is, I think, is actually another one of its strengths. Because if it had just been jokes, I don't think it would have been as entertaining in general. The jokes are about Batman's relationships, broadly speaking. Whether they are his interpersonal relationships with friends or his weird homoerotic relationship he has with Joker. And they just sort of play with all that stuff in here and about why he shuts people out and he needs to be a loner and how he learns his lesson that he doesn't need to be a loner.
And he loves, what's the lobster dish that he keeps eating?
Lobster Thermidor.
There you go, Thermidor.
I like when he's depressed and they have the whole world go gray except for the, you know, him. And then he has, Alfred says, you haven't touched your lobster Thermidor. And he has like six plates of the Lego lobster Thermidor sort of loosely stacked on top, and then he just like hurls them off. Is pretty odd. But he also in the movie he has an interest in rom-coms as this imaginary Lego character. He's fascinated with Jerry Maguire and Serendipity.
But he finds Jerry Maguire funny. So he's clearly emotionally broken.
Well, he finds it funny because it's his defense mechanism to mock that, as opposed to embrace how he really feels about it, which is that he wants to have that kind of feeling in his life.
Yeah, but at the end, they all laugh at the Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, they all are coming to embrace it and be a bat family. I also like at the beginning of the movie they don't really maintain this thread, but they point out how Batman's extra legal vigilante justice doesn't really map to anything, and how they should really have like police reform and be able to adapt the best parts of Batman's policies to be things that can be legally enforceable. In like her little PowerPoint presentation she has when she's joining.
Not wrong that the city with Batman in it has the most crime of anywhere in the world. Although, you know, that the Nolan Batman attempts to explain that with, you know, the whole escalation thing, you know, you put on a bat suit and then you got the Joker over here who's going to be even more theatrical, so you being a weirdo vigilante breeds the bad guys. Which I guess is, they don't really directly say it here, but same sort of point.
Yeah, I mean,
which just means if you eradicate the police, that means there will be no crime. That's how that works,
right? But he also well, they, I don't know if you noticed, but when he's depressed and he's walking and there's like a montage where they're cutting to a different crowd celebrating that all the bad guys are arrested, there's a couple of background characters who flip a police car or something back there because they say something like, yay, no more crime, and they just like, you know, riot basically.
The way we celebrate basketball games and stuff.
Yeah, it's just your finest sport is the elimination of crime. It's one of those things where he just it can really poke fun at all of those things, but in a loving way. I would say that this is not this is not like a dismantling of Batman in any sense. This is like, you know, we love you even though you're silly, kind of embrace of Batman, and that everybody should love him in all iterations of Batman. Is basically kind of how it comes out of it. And that's something oddly similar to another animated property I was watching, the Star Trek Lower Decks cartoon show, which is based on Star Trek. And at first it just seemed like throwaway, like Family Guy references to things, where it would just be like, yeah, we're just bringing up every Star Trek thing we can think of. But then the storytelling got more complex, well, for an animated TV show that's 30 minutes long, and they wove in, you know, the reason why they were bringing up certain things and why they were grabbing for certain things, and it's like, oh, you guys actually like really love the show, and this is about embracing all of the versions of Star Trek. You're not like an angry Redditor who's out there going, you know, only TNG was the best one. I don't believe in Enterprise or any of that stuff, like, or whatever. And this movie does sort of a similar thing where it's like, you know, oh, this is the only acceptable version of Batman. This is the only good version of Batman. Like, they're all good in the eyes of the film. So I thought that's a good approach, a healthy approach. I think if you're trying to take on some sort of franchise, you can kind of embrace all of it. You don't need to, like, ridicule or reject part of it in order to cater to your audience. So that's something.
I was just looking to see who the writers were here. It's probably some people, but this is directed by Chris McKay, who is the editor of the Lego Movie.
And was it assistant director of... Or animation director, something on the Lego Movie.
Animation department, animation co-director, yes. Yeah. As well as the voice of Larry the Barista. But he's also the director of The Tomorrow War, starring Chris Pratt from this year, the movie that everyone saw.
Yeah, that was not at all widely panned.
An Amazon movie where they go into the future with guns, and J.K. Simmons is all buff with a beard and stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I mean, just the trailer is looping at the top of Chris McKay's IMDb page is all.
Oh, yeah, I'm on Wikipedia. No trailers are looping here. Yeah. I respect the job that he did here. Also, apparently, he only had 2.5 years to do this. It was a very compressed time schedule for an animated project.
Only 2.5 years? How long is this supposed to take?
Well, I mean, an animated project like this takes a long time because you have to... build everything digitally, animate everything, do all the effects and all that. It's all built. It's not, there isn't any part of this movie where you're like, yeah, we're going to have the actors come to set one day, we'll shoot that day, and then we have material. Like, you gotta, like, assemble everything in space, in all directions. So it takes usually about 2 years for an animated movie.
You just go buy some Legos at the store and you put them together and you point the camera at them.
Yeah. Also, I think a lot of people are under the misconception that stop motion is relied upon heavily in these.
because they have a digital stop motion look to them.
Mm-hmm. But that's on purpose. It is Animalogic. I think they do all of, if I'm not mistaken, all of the Lego movies. But they got a thing that they do.
Did I tell you about the friend I used to work with at Intel who was so mad that the Lego movie was stop motion that he like wanted to walk out? He's like, why couldn't it just be regular? It's like, but it looked cool stop motion. He hated it so much. It was a really weird hill to die on. I don't know why he did.
So, was he upset that they looked like Legos but weren't moving smoothly? Or was he upset that they were basically moving on stepped curves where they're like popping from one position to the other?
Yeah, it was the stop motion popping that he thought, like, why did they have to do that?
Well, he's wrong.
I agree.
What else to say about that? I love the stylization of not just the Lego movie, but this movie as well. This movie also embraces a lot of action, kind of broad action trope things, where you get, like, the camera flying through various scenes and the way they frame up some of the action. Not all of it, but it's interesting to see the way they choose to do it. And apparently, according to Chris McKay, part of his studio pitch for the movie, let's see, what is it? His work on the Lego Batman movie was influenced by the comedy portrayed in both Naked Gun and Airplane film series. With his pitch for the film to the studios, it's kind of clumsy. All right, with the pitch for his film to the studios being described as like Jerry Maguire as directed by Michael Mann. So that's interesting. I don't really feel like this movie is that. But in terms of a pitch, I can see how maybe it would evoke something visually for someone.
Jerry Maguire directed by Michael Mann is his reference?
Apparently. That was his pitch, anyway.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. I mean, I think he means like, the relationships and, you know, feelings of Jerry Maguire, but in the action-y trappings of Michael Mann, maybe? I don't know.
Oh, sure, the action feels very real and gritty here.
No.
I'm sure they spent a lot of time working on the way that the gunfire echoes off of the buildings in downtown L.A. or wherever.
Well, it's really about how you say pew every time you fire.
Yeah, the pew sounds realistic and really loud. It sort of just bangs off of the concrete walls.
Mm-hmm. And you know, when a character looks like they're like when the cat gets consumed by lava and it says I'm fine. And it's the gritty realism that Michael Mann goes for.
Uh-huh, exactly. Yeah. And then the Audio Slave song, it was perfectly timed.
Mm-hmm. I like all of it. It does carry over in terms of the stuff from the Lego movie. It does carry over, like we said, a couple cameos and stuff. So you're Channing Tatum, mm-hmm. your favorite.
Always good.
And Jonah Hill and just a bunch of other background people who were sort of there. They're in the little party thing. And I like the little party thing.
And then, of course, we can't ignore. We've got Will Arnett from the Lego Movie playing Batman again. We have Michael Cera here as Robin, Dick Grayson, whatever, who is, I mean, he's immediately recognizable as Michael Cera, but he's also very good. Mm-hmm. As I expressed to you, because I don't know, there's something wrong with my brain. I apparently saw this movie 2.5 years ago and remembered absolutely nothing about it, except I remembered a little bit of Michael Cera being in this and his energy. I enjoyed the Michael Cera here, and I don't know, maybe Galifianakis as the Joker, but that one kind of caught me off guard.
Yeah,
have you've seen this before, right?
Yeah, that's why I've previously said that I like it.
Well, okay, but like several times, how long ago, when did you see it?
I think I've probably seen it 3 times.
Give us the Joe / Lego Batman movie history / relationship here.
Well, I saw it on home video after it had been in theaters. I didn't feel compelled to run out and see it for some reason, but then I laughed a lot and thought it was very funny. And then I saw it another time, and then I saw it today.
This is the only major Lego movie spinoff, right, other than the sequel? They did another one. There was the
Ninjago
the Ninjago one.
Yeah.
I didn't see that one.
No, I didn't see that either. You know, it's something. This is a fine movie. It's a good movie. And enjoy it. Enjoy it for what it is.
It's anamorphic again, mm-hmm. which is nice.
Yeah.
I love our anamorphics.
Did you enjoy all of the Sapphire plugins that were used to like flare background elements in this to great effect, I guess?
Sure. I should get some of those. They still sell those, right?
Yes. But what's weird is because it's anamorphic, if you pay close attention to like when they would use there's like a 6-point star filter thing that they did. Mm-hmm. it has a 1.0 aspect ratio instead of being, you know, different than that. So that's something.
Yeah. I was trying to send you this image, but apparently you can't just like copy an image source on IMDb anymore. No. I think that's the one you're talking about.
That's how you protect people from things that are unprofitable for IMDb.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's one of them. But yeah, you see how it's just not if it was anamorphic, it would be all stretchy,
squooshed and stretches.
Yeah, squash and stretch is an animation property.
Mm-hmm. Anticipation and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Anticipation. God.
Don't bring that into this.
I mean,
he could have been a bad guy in the large list of bad guys in this movie, though.
That would have been interesting. What a children's movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. No, they had an interesting assortment of bad guys. One interesting choice was using Voldemort as a bad guy, but having Voldemort be Eddie Izzard as opposed to Ralph Fiennes, who...
is Voldemort. Yeah, but yeah. He played he was Alfred, so
yeah, so you have to
did
hire
they, did they
else.
Make any sort of casual reference to that in the movie?
No,
they must have missed it. They did.
They didn't bother. But it's just one of those funny things. And then, you know, like Sauron is Jermaine Clement and stuff, and so there's like some funny stuff in the background. Doug Benson is Bane, doing his mocking version of Tom Hardy, you know, mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of comedians in this. Mm-hmm. Mariah Carey is the mayor.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah.
She had, what, one line, maybe two?
She has the one scene where she is pretending, where she is Batman pretending to be the mayor at the beginning of the movie, and then the retirement of Gordon scene, and then that's it.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So that was probably a solid day's worth of work for her.
Sure. You got a lot of cameos in here, of all the different people. I mean, you got, you know, when they go through the big montage of people, they had big name voices do all those characters, and they, you know, I think Zoe Kravitz as Catwoman, didn't she just say like meow meow I'm mm-hmm. in when she was hacking? That was it. Like that was, they brought her in just for that.
Yeah, basically.
Hmm. Ellie Kemper got a lot as a Lego Phyllis. Brick yeah. stoplight phantom zone thing. Mm-hmm. That's not a real thing, right? Like, well, I'm not a real thing, but like for a phantom zone thing, is it an actual phantom zone thing? Does a stoplight tell you you're bad or not?
No, I don't know if there is a Lego stoplight that scans to see if you're bad. My understanding is that it is just a zone that one might be banished to.
Mm. A phantom type zone?
Yeah. Yeah. I did like the laundry vehicle that pulls up, and it's Phantom's own laundry. So it was Phantom apostrophe S space own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was clever.
Which had to have been coordinated by the Joker to really put that in Batman's mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tricky
that
plan.
Clown Prince of Crime over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is what he wanted all along.
I like the design of Joker with his like pointy teeth and stuff. At least,
yeah, could have done without that. But,
come on,
yeah.
You don't like the Joker here? I mean, he's no Jared Leto.
I thought in terms of my criticisms of this, as I have given a lot of like, you know, effusive praise so far. I would say that the characterization of the Joker is kind of not my favorite one. It's a little spotty because it relies heavily on the Joker's feelings of rejection from Batman in a nearly romantic relationship kind of way, which is just an odd. It just is odd in the way the movie plays out, but it is. I understand what they're going for. I prefer other Jokers. I mean, I think my favorite Joker is Mark Hamill's Joker from the Batman animated series.
That's the very hip, cool kid thing to say these days, I think.
Well, that's because we're millennials, and everything we like is now the central pillar of culture that it needs to be. And everything everybody else likes is crap now. So,
and if you don't like it, you can go to your room.
Yeah, we better enjoy this for as long as we can, before all the, you know, youths rise up and then they have their thing from when they were a kid that becomes the big thing that everybody loves, and then we're
can't wait for the Lego Yu-Gi-Oh movie or whatever.
Oh man,
I don't even know what a Yu-Gi-Oh
well,
is.
I was just gonna say
like a Pokemon.
I think Yu-Gi-Oh! Is closer to our age range than it is to kids these days.
Oh, is it? What do the kids these days have?
I don't know. TikTok? I'm sure.
I like TikTok. Yeah. TikTok's enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, you frequently send me links on TikTok, and it has a banner at the top that says you can follow Dan on TikTok.
Please don't follow me. I don't post anything. I just
not
like to watch
join.
The videos. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of fun videos about, you want to feel old, about people who are... being called old in their late 20s and making videos about it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm going to be 39 this year.
Yeah.
You're
old.
I'm going to die eventually. So
I think we're all going to die eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, probably.
Infinite timeline.
I don't think they're going to invent any sort of life-extending medicine or apparatus in our lifetime.
I mean, if they did, it would just be for the rich people. So until we rise up and overthrow them.
Well, you know, all the rich people will get it, and then it'll be democratized, right? Trickle down
immortality.
Trickle down immortality, is that what you said?
Yeah,
I like that. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. You just you need to just pick the robber baron you want to support and hope that they gamble that they choose to give you some form of life.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize that you're a cursed being who's a shadow of your former self walking this earth seeking sweet release, as all immortal beings do eventually.
Is that a Watchmen reference or like Kung Fu or something?
No, that's just like every immortal character ever referenced. It's a, sort of a stereotype of immortal characters because they could.
I would nap a lot if I was immortal, I think.
But you, you
wouldn't really be missing much.
More of a, you know, Dracula route for you?
Yeah, it's not so much like, oh, I wasted so much of my life napping. I'd be like, I'm extremely refreshed and I can just do this all day long.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I would do anything special with immortality. Because then there's also immortality versus eternal youth. Because those are not the same
thing. Oh, yeah. Immortality is not great if you're just like 900 years old and sort of like hunched over with a giant beard.
Yeah, well, assuming that you are not just like some sort of vaguely skeletal, like partially mummified thing. Yeah, it's just, you know, eternal youth. You know,
yeah, I like the eternal youth. I don't want to just keep getting older and then not die. What a horrible thing.
Yeah, I know. But you got to be careful with eternal youth, though. You know, just watch interview with the vampire.
You, you'll like turn into a baby. I didn't watch that. They'll turn you into a baby or something, and then you'll be an eternal baby.
No, it's not like that. It's not like that kind of like a genie trick. It's like eternal youth, meaning like you're stuck at that level that you're at.
Sure.
Or like Death Becomes Her. Where they have eternal youth, but it also means that they are not undamageable, impervious. You ever seen Death Becomes Her?
Yes, it's been a very long time, but I have.
I quite like it. It is not, like, classically speaking, good, but it's, it's
well,
very
it's
campy.
From that era of movies, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. I mean, it's
Who made that movie? That's a person. Is that Zemeckis?
It's a Zemeckis.
This is Zemeckis.
Zemeckis. Yeah, back when he was shooting real-life human beings, before he stopped doing that for a while.
Oh, that was also in Bruce Willis's weirdo phase, where he was just doing weird stuff.
Yeah, as opposed to now, where he's doing normal things.
Well, more normal things than, like I feel like that's kind of Hudson Hawk adjacent. Maybe it's a little later, I'm sure, but... And what was that other one where they did the very famous, like, long opening one-er shot, the movie that was absolutely terrible? You know what I'm talking about, dude?
No, I'm just drawing a blank on what this...
It's like one of the longest opening one-shots in cinema history with this Bruce Willis movie, and it's just an absolute disaster of a movie.
No, I don't think I know what that is off the top of my head.
You can watch the shot on YouTube and revel in its technical complexity, but it is a big steaming pile of... I'm scrolling...
You don't need to say you're scrolling when you're doing.
Death Becomes Her was 92. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So this is pre-Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
This is before he really, you know, got it together. So, okay, so when Hudson Hawk was 91, very, very similar. Bonfire of the Vanities, 1990. That's the...
Oh, okay. Yeah,
real stupid movie.
Don't really want to see it. But the... yeah, I don't have a thing for oneers, really. I find them to not be that interesting generally.
No, they're always terrible.
Yeah, it's as we've discussed when we did our episode on Birdman, or when we did we talked about the wonders that are in The Revenant. It's not a lot. they were just that opening scene part, really. I don't like really contrived camera movements. It bothers me. Takes me out of the moment.
All wonders are contrived.
Yeah. Just one of the reasons why
I should say I haven't seen 1917. Maybe they make it work there.
That was literally what I was gonna say. Is like I have yet to see that. I trust and love Roger Deakins. So I don't think he did anything that would be bad. But I don't know if I'm going to connect with it, or if I'm just going to not be as involved emotionally with the events going on, because I'll just be thinking about the camera the whole time.
Maybe we should watch that one next. Although that one's probably like 8 hours long, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's probably a several many hour long thing that we don't really have in our bandwidth to do.
Oh, it's 1:59, so it's not as bad as I thought.
Yeah, it's still 2 hours. You let me know when you have 2 hours of time to watch something, Dan.
No. I'll tell you now. No.
Yeah. Yeah, because this was
1:44.
Yeah,
I was shocked. This is a longer runtime for a Lego style movie. Although, wait, what was the original Lego movie? I feel like it was real concise.
I feel like they're usually around 1:30 to 1:45.
1:40, right in the middle there.
Yeah,
four extra minutes for Batman and his character development.
Because you really need to have a certain minimum amount of time in order for it to be like an animated feature, but you also don't want to have too much of it because it's also an animated feature, so every minute is very expensive.
That's why you gotta have a lot of slow motion, just like push ins while people aren't really doing anything.
That's why you do limited animation where you have just the background stay mostly still and be a lock off, and then you have just some foreground stuff moving.
Yeah. That sounds very pragmatic. Can you just write like some loop cycles for the background so it'll just like do it programmatically, and then you can just focus your energy on the foreground?
Yeah, well, I mean, you could, but it's mainly about the render aspect of that. That's also time consuming.
Just get more servers.
It's not cheaper. But
sure, that is. Just add more Amazon servers. Just
get more computers. But yeah, I don't know. I for an animated film, I like this. One of the things that I also liked about. Because this is a prior to Into the Spider-Verse, not very many people were doing adventurous things with animation at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So you had like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, but it was still kind of like, you know, Pixar eyeball kind of stuff. And you had a lot of Pixar-y things still at the time. So it's kind of refreshing in a way to see these Lego movies because it does... represent a different way of visualizing the animation that you're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was great. It was refreshing. It was back when we all still liked Chris Pratt a little bit more.
Yeah.
But you still have, you hold a special place in your heart for animated films, having worked on some, I suppose, right?
Yeah, I mean, I like animation just as a thing, and just as a method for doing your movie. Or your television show.
A medium, because it's not a genre, yes. As they say.
A lot of people, it really bothers me when you go to it used to be when you would go to, like, Blockbuster or whatever, and it'd just be, like, animated movies. And it's like, you know, it's not just, like, kids' stuff. It's not just, like, Care Bears. Like, there's a broad spectrum of things we could be doing with this.
How come nobody's done a gritty reboot of Care Bears yet?
Well, they did if you watched that episode of Robot Chicken. Yeah,
Chris McKay worked on Robot Chicken.
Yeah, for 3 years or something. Go type in Care Bears Robot Chicken, and you would be surprised about how adult that gets. But the,
I mean, like they should do like a live action.
No. Please no. They should just stop and then not do anything with that. I think a lot of people, falsely assume that they can just take like something and just make it again, slightly tweak it. And I encourage people not to do that. So don't make Care Bears. Watch it first and then be like, oh, this is why we should make it. It's not very good.
See also Mr. Wonka.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
No, I'm sure that'll be great. It'd be wonderful.
I mean, I believe I've told you this before. I don't like any of the Willy Wonka stuff. I don't care for.
You don't even have any nostalgia for the original Gene Wilder?
No, I found it creepy and weird. I didn't enjoy it.
It was weird.
I thought it was scary.
I mean, yeah, Slugworth was creepy and weird for sure. I mean, on purpose also, but like, you know, Gene Wilder was doing some questionable things there.
Yeah, I mean,
questionable, but you know, you know what I mean.
No, well, making some choices, like acting choices, is that what you're talking about? Or are you talking
he was doing some things that that caused you to ask questions and to pause while watching the film. He was not an immediately lovable character that you would latch onto.
Yeah, and I just don't care. I never wanted to see the Tim Burton version of it. I found it repulsive when I saw the trailer for that. I don't need the prequel with Timothée in it. I just not.
Did we ever find out if that supposed like leaked opening couple pages of the script was real or not? Because it seemed like such ridiculous satire that I hope it was not real.
No, I didn't read anything about that. Did you?
Oh, you never saw that? It was like a year ago or something. Somebody tweeted like, this is the first couple of pages of the Wonka movie, and it is absolutely completely unhinged.
Yeah, no. And there is also apparently was going around. I think it was like a link to a Vulture interview today. Somebody did with the person who leaked some behind the scenes stuff of the Timothée version, where he apparently this assistant referred to him as a twink. So then everybody was calling him what was it? I think I saw like one of the gay Twitter followers that it was just like Willy Twonka or something. Anyway, so it was it's not great. The discourse is pretty poor when it comes to this at the moment.
I mean, at least people are having some fun and they've got something to latch onto and not take it so seriously. I don't know.
I mean, but here's the thing. I am one of those people who doesn't feel like making a remake destroys something about your childhood.
No, because I agree.
You have the original to go back to whenever you want to. And
at the same time, looking at a lot of the new ones that come out, I just kind of look at them and it's like, did we need this? We don't need this. But, you know, just remakes. That's a lot of regular movies, too.
Yeah, and it doesn't... No one's going to force you to see it, so you just don't watch
it. You force me to see things. You make me watch things against my will.
Not everybody has a podcast where they make their co-host watch something. But
you force feed me terrible movies like a goose eating whatever they feed them for foie gras.
Yeah, I'm not going to force feed you anything in terms of Willy Wonka, so you're safe there. But what I'm saying in terms of like remakes is like, it doesn't bother me in the general sense that they exist or are being made. Other than, I don't think that whatever it is compelling. Now, some remakes are actually good. And a lot of times people who throw those arguments about like, they shouldn't remake anything, blah, blah, blah. It's like they fail to understand that they happen to appreciate things that are remakes or retellings of other previous versions of things.
If you've ever seen a Quentin Tarantino movie, that is just a mashed up remake of a bunch of other movies.
Yeah, or like The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing.
Mm-hmm. It's very good.
Yeah, that's a remake of a very bad movie, very bad old black and white movie. So it's or like if you for some reason like the Cronenberg Fly, there's an earlier version of that that's also terrible. But I don't happen to like the Cronenberg Fly movie. But
I've seen it. I don't think I want to see it again. It's too gross,
icky. But there's just remakes in and of themselves are not an evil thing that is visited upon us on this world. I don't feel compelled to really get worked up or see them. But it did kind of bother me when I watched that Home Alone, the new Home Alone trailer.
Home Sweet Home Alone with the kid from Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah, and I was watching that. I was just like, this is insulting to me on like a production value, like set of standards as well as everything else that's going on here. Because it just
what about the production value was
it
insulting.
Looks so cheap. It looks real thrifty and real unartistic. And I'm not going to say
it,
that
it can't look worse than like the third or fourth one or whatever, which is the one where it's the girl at home.
Oh, I don't know. I saw the third one, which was there was a boy at home who wasn't related to the McAllisters, and for some reason I think Carrie Ann Moss was one of the villains doing the home invasion in that one. It's one of those things where it's just like, you don't need to, it's not that you don't need to make them so much as like, I don't feel like you made an honest effort here to do anything good. But you know,
they have accents now, though.
Yeah, but Home Alone 2 didn't make an honest effort to do anything good either, and I happen to like Home Alone 2. So that's, you know, something else to consider. It's just like, maybe if you're the right age, you'll ignore complete flaming garbage that something is.
Home Alone 4, French Stewart plays a character named Marv. I can only assume he's the son of Marv. And Missy Pyle is, I believe, a bad guy as well.
Oh, that's the worst use of Missy Pyle. I was about to say French Stewart, but I was like, no, what's the good use for French Stewart?
Third Rock from the Sun and nothing else. Yeah. It's called Home Alone 4, Taking Back the House.
Oh. Yeah. I stand corrected.
Hmm?
French Stewart was in the Predator movie, right? The first one? Wasn't he one of the Marines?
No.
Who am I thinking of?
Shane Black?
Oh.
Who looked like him, in the, kind of?
I feel like French Stewart played a Marine or something in something, and I'm just failing to remember what it was.
That would be incredible.
Mm. Oh, Stargate. That's what it was. The original Stargate movie. He was one of the Marines there.
He was a crewman. Oh, in Broken Arrow, he was like on a submarine or something? I don't remember. We watched Broken Arrow, right? John Travolta, Christian Slater?
Yes.
Nuclear weapons?
No, but I always get that confused with, what's the other one that was Steven Seagal that was also around that time period?
Executive Decision?
I guess. I didn't see that or really Broken Arrow until we watched it.
You should see Executive Decision. Well, it's, I got drunk and watched it a couple of months ago. It's fun to watch except for all of the standard, era based, Islamophobia and, bad guys and stuff.
I just, don't want to watch anything that has Steven Seagal in it. Barrier.
Spoilers, mm-hmm. Steven Seagal is the headliner, but he's not in the movie very long. It's a Kurt Russell movie.
Oh, okay. Interesting choice.
It's a very well-known quirk of that movie in that Steven Seagal got top billing, and I think he's in the movie for like 13 minutes.
Wow, he pulled a Brando.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was shocking to audiences at the time. They're like, wow, Steven Seagal. And then, not anymore.
No. I mean, you could say that about Steven Seagal a lot. Not anymore.
I would like to say that about Steven Seagal more, to be honest with you. But anyway, let's circle back to the Lego Batman. I was a little surprised they didn't go Spider-Verse and have multiple Batsmen here and try to get some of the other Batsmen to do voices here. Well, it seemed like an opportunity for them.
But not every movie needs to do that. But the movie does sort of playfully acknowledge the other Batman in several moments.
I like that when Alfred said, I've seen you go through phases like this, and then lists every year that a Batman movie ever came out.
Yeah, and you see them styled as if it was the Joel Schumacher era. You see the literal clip of the 1966, was it 66, 67? 66 movie. And you see other stuff in there from making fun of Justice League things. But you get, it wasn't Justice League. It was Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice.
That yes, of course. In there. The Dawn of the Justicing.
Ugh, gross.
Did you see those?
Yeah. Yeah, I watched Dawn of Justice. That was one where I did get drunk and watched that one, and I was just so angry at the horses in the beginning of the movie. Why? It just made me upset because I felt like he was
doing. I don't
remember
horses.
It's so stupid. At the beginning of the movie, Bruce Wayne is like all panicked and like trying to like cross the river because for some reason Metropolis is on the other side of the river from Gotham, and he's like all freaked out. And there's all these explosions and dust clouds and everything from I guess the events of Man of Steel.
A horse. It's played from the other perspective.
Yeah, and there's like a horse freaking out and neighing and stuff, and they just keep showing these shots of the horse, and it's like, is this symbolism for something? It's opaque to me what it could be possibly about, but then the whole thing, and of course the Martha, whatever, but that movie is trash. Pure trash. Trashy.
I mean,
trash.
It's no Justice League.
I refuse to see any version of that movie. We will never cover it on the podcast. So
you say that now.
I mean, I guess when they chop it up into whatever it is, 1 hour segments or whatever, we can do one every week for a month and then hate ourselves.
Yeah. I'm still curious what the Snyder Cut looks like, but also not really. I mean, I watched mm-hmm. that one little, I'm sure you saw the clip going around where they compared the Snyder Cut versus the original edit, just to show you the bits that weren't there for like the Wonder Woman fight sequence. And everyone's like, oh my God, the Snyder Cut's so much better. And also 4:3, which whatever, you know, you AB two versions of an edit, like it's interesting to a certain degree, but I don't really know that I need to see 4 hours of that.
No. Also, you wouldn't be ABing. You'd have to be like, was this different from the other one? What happened in the other one? You'd have to watch both and compare them. And it's just like,
no, I wouldn't do that. No. I would just extrapolate from what I saw.
I have no interest in investing anything like that into this. But another area where they referenced the other movies is when Joker and Batman are first talking at the beginning, and they're talking about the different things, and he mentions the boat, obviously a reference to the Dark Knight with the boat scene there. So, you know, there's plenty
times
of
Batman has defeated you mm-hmm. the time with the boat, and then he says something else that other time, something else, and he's like, it'll be different than those.
Yes,
what's the other one he says? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's very funny though. And I like that the movie references those things, and I feel like by doing that you're bringing in those things into this world. Apparently that was also part of the rationale that Chris McKay says he was using in terms of how he was marrying the gritty, gruff, like Snyder era Batman Will Arnett thing that was going on with the bright and cheerful and chipper Robin of like the, you know, Burt Ward 1960s version of Robin.
Tearing the pants off.
Yeah, and just like having those two things coexist by, you know, being able to have this universe where you can talk about how absurd a lot of this stuff is. Like, I think Batman talks about like the 90 years or whatever that he's been saving the city. I find that helps tie in all those things in a way where it feels affectionate towards all of the various Batman properties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that, I guess.
Yeah. Although it is a little it's strange that they took away some of the origin story of, you know, the specifics of the gymnastics stuff for Robin. But
oh, yeah, they sort of just TLDR'd over the fact that he has gymnastic skills and he's an orphan.
Yeah. They lean heavily on the orphan part. Get him on the first jet back to the orphanage.
I mean, this is the first time we really see Robin like at an orphanage, right? Like in the Chris O'Donnell, like he was loner on a motorcycle. My family died because of the bad guys and stuff, mm-hmm. but he wasn't like living in an orphanage.
No, because he was too old for that. He had a motorcycle. You don't go to live in an orphanage if you have a motorcycle.
That's just the rules of the road.
Yeah, but he was not old enough to not live with someone. So he had to be adopted by Bruce Wayne. That was an interesting wrinkle of Batman Forever, but yeah.
But also, like, you know, he was like, you know, rebellious teenager. Well, he was older than a teenager, but like he had that sort of rebellious, you're not my real dad vibe to Mr. Clooney. This movie, I guess, deserves credit for being like the only one that really sort of pushes Batman to try and like have relationships with people. Like, I guess, mm-hmm. you know, they try to have that sort of fake father-son partnership thing in whichever Batman and Robin, whatever Batman Forever, whatever it was. I don't remember the name.
It was Batman and Robin, which was the sequel to that one. And they had a thing there where Chris O'Donnell's Robin felt like Batman was being overbearing and not trusting him to make his own decisions. And Batman's like, you're not ready to make your own decisions. I know best. And then the truth is that they need to be more trusting of each other. So,
and then Alicia Silverstone's there for some reason also.
Yeah. I would say that it is a mercy that they didn't lean heavily on any sort of Alicia Silverstone reference for that here. So that's good.
Yeah. But, well, that's the same Rosario Dawson character, right? Barbara Gordon?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's not Barbara Gordon in Batman and Robin, because remember, they made her Alfred's niece.
Right.
For no good reason. Because Alfred was getting sick. He was going to pass, but then he didn't because they got an antidote from Mr. Freeze. Anyway, that movie's not good. So we'll stop talking about that now. But
anyway, so aside from the badness of that movie, there's the, you know, the complicated father-son relationship there. And this one, it's a much more obviously Lego movie, not a children's movie, but it's a more positive, let's all, you know, trust each other and be a family together kind of vibe. But like, you know, the people around Batman are the ones that rescue him.
Yeah, well, he needs to accept their help, and work with them. So I think that's a good lesson. And I think that is very applicable to Batman in general terms. So I feel like it's a good thing to have in the movie. I don't feel like that's out of left field by any stretch of the imagination. They did take the I don't need to listen to you, you're not my real dad thing, and apply it to Batman's relationship with Alfred. And so I thought that was interesting, because he's rebelling against Alfred telling him how to, you know, deal with his emotions, and you know,
which is a little Nolan-y, but you know, different vibe, different rebellion.
Yeah. There's also the way the movie chose to handle the relationship between Bruce Wayne and Batman, where he in the movie thinks of himself as Batman, and Bruce Wayne is just a persona that he puts on.
He's Batman's roommate.
Yes. You live in Bruce Wayne's basement? No, Batman doesn't live in Bruce Wayne's basement. Bruce Wayne lives in Batman's attic. So it's, you know, kind of funny the way that they, you know, played with that a little bit.
That's why I could never be a superhero. I don't have an attic or a basement.
Yeah, and previous depictions of Batman have varied on whether or not they view Batman as the costume or Batman as the real person and Bruce Wayne as the costume. So it's, you know, it makes sense and tracks with that history that they have.
Sure.
Yeah.
You can just try some stuff. It's the Batman universe. Just try some stuff. See what sticks.
Yeah. Put in some Daleks.
Right. Isn't there a line in there that somebody, they call them like alien robots or something, and then somebody says like, ask your nerd friends?
Yeah, I think it's something like British alien robots. Ask your nerd friends. Yeah, it's because I don't know why they couldn't say Dalek, but it was funny to see them in there. But the stuff with Sauron, King Kong, etc. Good. Good stuff.
I definitely appreciate all of the Sauron jokes and the Dalek jokes.
And you get all the references. I know that one day, should they ever release an abbreviated version of The Lord of the Rings, maybe I can get you to watch it.
Why would we want to do that?
It's a historically significant film. I don't mean the movie is historic. I don't mean the internal stuff that happens in the movie is historically significant, because that's all BS. But
it's historically significant to our culture as a people.
Yeah, it's referenced in the Lego movie for crying out loud. It has to. It has to be significant.
Ugh. I don't wanna. There's tiny people with hairy feet and then wizards and stuff.
Yeah, but they don't really do a lot of magic, so it's fine that way.
Like fantasy.
It's mainly about complicated interpersonal relationships, and you know, being able to trust people and being able to recognize the appropriate ways to wield or give up power. So that's all interesting stuff. The fantasy stuff's just a trapping. Just like with Star Trek, you know, it's just, you know, space stuff is just there, but it's all about the characters. And how much you love the characters?
Sure, of course. Mm-hmm. It's just really a backdrop. Morals. It's a metaphor.
Mm-hmm. They're morality plays, but
fantasy's bullshit. I like hard sci-fi. I'm very happy to be. God, what was that guy's name? Roland? Was that his character name?
Yes.
Yeah.
From Party Down. I'm glad you finally watched it because you were so resistant, and then you dove in.
It was good. It was entertaining. There's there's some bits there. It's the best use of Steve Guttenberg that has ever existed. I would love to believe that he's actually that person there.
Okay.
Very theatrical, very generous, very naked. Just drinks a lot of wine, drives a Porsche around.
Yeah. But
let us all aspire to be the Party Down with Steve Guttenberg.
I don't know. I think we can aim slightly higher than that. But and speaking of bringing stuff back, they're bringing back Party Down. Anyway, I think I shared that news with you.
They're going to do a movie or something. I don't think there's been any like progress on it COVID or whatever.
Yeah, but nobody's made progress on anything. But you know, if you ever want to see,
we've made things. We've made things. How come other people aren't making things?
Yeah, I mean, we're working ourselves into an early grave. Why can't everybody else?
Yeah, exactly. If we got to do this, why can't they?
Yeah, but
I don't want to be awake. I just want to nap all the time.
Well, maybe you'll get your
pizza and a burrito and take a nap, and then you know. Wake up and then take another nap.
Well, I'm sorry. You should try to get a union job because it sounds like they have it real cushy.
How do I get in on that strike?
Out of
solidarity or something, right?
Yeah. Well, you can, if you strike in solidarity, they can fire you because you're not actually protected in the union.
I'm not in the union. I'm not in production really either. So that doesn't really. Track.
Yeah, right. But anyway, the whatever they do to decide to make that, at least Ken Marino is doing exactly the same character in the other two. So I have that comfort.
It's on my list of things to get
to. I'm not sure you will like it.
No, really? Well, everyone seems to speak so highly of it.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. Michael likes
it. Well, I mean,
you know, Merlin likes it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people like it. A lot of people with good taste like it. I don't think you're going to like it, is what I'm saying.
How dare you? How dare you? I have taste.
I am concerned it may be too slow and also gay for you. So I think that may be the
too
issue.
Too slow and also gay for me.
Yes.
Is there any sort of comparison that would be useful for me in terms of both the speed and the gay?
No, I mean, I think Party Down is probably a decent enough anchor point for you. It's just not like...
You think it's close enough to Party Down?
No, but it's that thing where there's like not always a lightning fast joke, and there is a little bit of like mild heart in there in terms of, you know, the characters like feeling something underneath all of the silliness. I'm not sure that you would... be engaged, but if you watch it and you like it, then that's great. But you know, I don't have high hopes for you specifically.
Wow,
other people should watch it.
I don't know if I should be insulted or not.
Yeah, probably.
I guess I'll have to watch it to find out if I should be insulted.
But you know, that's just how it goes. That's how the cookie crumbles. But I don't know if there's anything else we have left to say about Lego Batman.
No, it's fun. Mm-hmm. It's fun in a lot of the same ways that the Lego movie was fun.
Mm-hmm.
I recall the Lego movie 2 being fun, but slightly less fun than the first one, obviously. But, you know, all these are good. Will Arnett's always good, especially as Batman.
Yes, he's a very good Batman because he has a gruff speaking voice naturally, and he does it. He goes even lower, for when he does Batman, which makes it even more ridiculous. And that's, of course, playing off of the Christian Bale version. So that's always a delight.
I would enjoy seeing Michael Cera as a live action Robin.
That would be weird.
That would be very funny to me.
Yeah. But I thought that, just from a voice acting perspective, cause you usually see Michael Cera in a role where he is more or less Michael Cera. But when he's doing voice acting, he's, obviously more free to inhabit, a different kind of role. So I thought that was interesting that he has this really earnest optimism and enthusiasm about everything, Padre. And I think that is part of what makes that work so well in a way where if you put him in a live action setting, I'm worried that he's just going to seem like he's in Arrested Development, but in a Robin costume.
Well, his voice energy is reminiscent of coked up Michael Cera from This Is the End, which I don't know that you've seen.
I have not seen that.
Oh, you should see it just for the Michael Cera.
Okay.
It's probably the best Michael Cera role that's ever been. And it's not, you don't have to watch the whole movie to see the Michael Cera.
Go to YouTube, Michael Cera, This Is the End.
Yeah, you can do that. There's probably, you know, 5 collective minutes of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll do that, and you watch the Care Bears Robot Chicken.
Okay, sure.
Seems like a fair trade.
I don't know. I don't know if that's accurate or not.
No, it's incredibly not accurate, which is why I was laughing. So, on that note, we can wrap up early. You know, get to bed on time.
We can disassemble our Legos.
Yeah.
Put them away. Put them back where we found them. Don't just leave them out on the floor. Somebody will step on them.
No, yeah. Lego may ego.
I haven't had an Eggo in so long.
They're not that good.
No, but you know, they're quick.
The highest compliment.
Convenience. Waffles.
And on that note, a convenient end.
You can choose. Hey Robin, give me the mic, drop the beat. Think you can handle that? Yeah, we're friends, but I'm still hardcore, just as awesome as I was before. In the darkness I am brooding, you're adorably intruding, but I don't mind, I'm not irate, because we both agree I'm great. Tortured soul, darker soul, but guess who's got the title role? Now's his time to be the star. Let Alfred loose on his guitar.